I'm Rick Moore, and this is Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore, brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, and by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. My great pleasure now to be back with Dr. Christine McGrath, who is the Director of Operations for the Massachusetts Association of School Superintendents. And Dr. McGrath, welcome back to MSO.
Thanks, Rick. It's great to reconnect with you.
I appreciate it. And, you know, to say that you've been busy is kind of an understatement. And I know you're just catching your breath here during this Christmas week, and hopefully you'll get a Christmas break. But, you know, there's so much to talk about, Dr. McGrath, in terms of superintendents and how they're taking care of their districts and so on. But it seems to me that this is sort of like a pop-up target. We used to have to shoot pop-up targets in basic training, and it's sort of like whack-a-mole. One thing would pop up, you're supposed to shoot it, and then just a second later, something else would pop up. And in terms of challenges, it seems like that's what school systems are going through, or have been going through, since March.
Without question. No, you are absolutely right. Our association, the Mass Association of School Superintendents, is organized across the state with 8 roundtables. So there's a North Shore Superintendents Roundtable, a South Shore, a Connecticut Valley, etc. Plus there's a roundtable for our urban superintendents. And my colleague, Mary Bork, former superintendent in Chelsea, she and I attend almost all of the roundtable meetings.
Okay.
And we have been doing that since April. The level of consternation, the level of frustration on the part of our superintendents across the state has been mounting each and every month. There are debates, and you and I are both sports enthusiasts. We know the inherent value of athletics, but there's the debate, are we going to have fall sports? Are we going to have spring sports? Which sports are we, winter sports? Which sports are we going to have? Then there's the debate of, every child must have a flu vaccination. So the question is, if the parent, for religious reasons or whatever reason, says, no, my child is not going to be vaccinated, the superintendents are currently looking for direction. Does that mean I have to unenroll that student? You know, we're in an environment where the governor, the commissioner are encouraging us to bring back as many youngsters as possible. Please don't give us a reason to send a child home who may be benefiting from in-person learning. So there are many elements to this that are either the guidance. I think there's been some frustration that in the summer the superintendents and assistant superintendents were told 85% of the learning requirements will be detailed by the state, and then that shifted to no. Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to let you submit your 3 reopening plans for our approval. And the 3 would be obviously remote, hybrid, which is a combination of in-person and remote, and full in-person. And so they submitted them. They were approved. And then at the Board of Ed meeting last Tuesday, some new guidelines, regulations for some new guidelines were enacted by the board. For student learning time. So now they have to go back to the bargaining table and renegotiate memorandums of understanding with teacher unions and redo working conditions. So there's an awful lot going on, and not to mention the amount of time, effort, and energy to contact trace, to notify parents and guardians. I just got an email from a superintendent to say that the women on his women's hockey team, that there had been a positive. So he's now got to go through that process.
You know, it seems, gosh, maybe I'm reading this the wrong way, but it sort of seems like when I was a teacher, I would get frustrated when I got orders from on high about some classroom thing or some curriculum thing that I thought that person knew nothing about because he wasn't in the classroom. And it seems like, boy, all the way up to the level of superintendents, They're being frustrated by the fact that these orders are coming down, sort of like mandates. And do the superintendents have any input? I know there's a board. I know there's an advisory board to the governor. But in general, Dr. McGrath, do the superintendents have any input? I can't imagine there's even a consensus because of what goes on in different towns and cities.
We meet very regularly with the Commissioner of Education and members of his senior staff. In the beginning, we were meeting weekly. It's a little less frequent than that, but it's very consistent. So, for example, with the structured learning time regulations, Commissioner Riley called us to a meeting simply to give us a heads up that these were going to be discussed at the Board of Ed. So we tuned into the Board of Ed. I had another meeting, so I was in and out. But tomorrow we will go to a session specifically to answer any questions we have about these regulations. We, as an executive committee, the executive committee for the Superintendents Association, meets very regularly with the commissioner. We meet sometimes with members of his senior staff on topics such as the mobile tracing unit. If you think you have a spike in your school district, we'll send a mobile van and we can get people tested in a fairly rapid order. You know, obviously we've been going to meetings on, I think it's called Binax, which is a test, a swab, a nasal swab that can be done in school. So that if the, and can be, the results are known instantly. So if a child is swabbed, the result is negative, then they don't send the child home to be quarantined. The child appears to be okay. So the lines of communication are very open. Mm-hmm. I'm convening a group of assistant superintendents who are going to meet with a representative from the Department of Ed to talk about the realistic approach to supervisory practices, supervision and evaluation. You know, if you and I are part of a high school math team and I'm teaching remotely and you're teaching from Gloucester High School in a hybrid model, you know, is the approach to supervising me the same as the approach to supervising you?
Right.
It's just a lot of moving parts.
Oh, my goodness. I can't even imagine. I get a headache just thinking about it, and I know so many people who are, to put it bluntly, they're just trying so hard. They're trying so hard. And you mentioned practices, and you mentioned guidelines. I did read, and I think we mentioned in our pregame warm up here, there are some education guidelines now in terms of learning practices, or how long the kids have to be in class, or what is that all about?
So, if your district is in a hybrid model, you must provide at least 35 hours of live instruction over a 10-day period. Now, that can be lecturing. It can be presenting the new material for the day and then sending the children to break rooms, and the teacher circulates among the break rooms to monitor how they're doing. But there must be a physical connection between the teacher and the child each and every day. If you're in a remote learning model over that 10-day period, there should be 40 hours of that synchronous type of instruction. Mm. So, and the reason that they've done this, the commissioner is very concerned, and we're all very concerned, about the social-emotional impact on a lot of youngsters. They're seeing, there's a report that there's been an appreciable increase in emergency room visits by youngsters who are just psychologically experiencing some difficulty. So the solution from their perspective is, from the board's perspective and the commissioner's perspective, is give them the human contact each and every day. Let them know somebody cares about them. That's incredibly important. But you have, as I say, memorandum of understanding that have been executed in good faith by school committees, with teacher unions, with superintendents, and it's not always you know, you can't just snap your fingers and make some of these well-intentioned regulations happen.
Ah, man, you know, wow. It's just, well, I hope it's temporary. I think there are going to be a lot of good things that come from this. Not a lot, but there'll be some good things that come from all this learning, the learning about learning, that's happening right now and all the stuff that, all educators are going through. But from the actual, curriculum standpoint, Dr. McGrath, what's the feeling among superintendents, at least anecdotally, about, how this is going? Because it seems to me that you gotta, I mean, nationwide, we can't have this, the exact same standards that we had before this pandemic. I mean, hopefully we'll get them back, but right now, don't we have to be flexible sort of across the board? There's got to be some flexibility. And whether that has to do with credits or grades or, I don't know, getting into college or whatever, do you know what I'm trying to ask here? There's got to be some give and take. And I know that for everybody, it's student safety that's at the top of the list.
Student safety, I think the consensus among our superintendents is that youngsters who come from middle and upper middle class and upper class homes, who have technology-rich home environments, who have an opportunity, whether it's, you know, you and I and Eileen Irwin getting together as a pod, and, you know, you deliver the math and she delivers the English.
Okay.
I deliver the kindergarten curriculum. So those youngsters, the consensus is those youngsters will be okay. There will be a bit of a learning gap, but they've had some fairly consistent instructional experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the other side, when I talk with the roundtable of urban superintendents, There's definite cause for concern. They're dealing with phenomenal thousands of meals that they're distributing each and every day under the school lunch program, the parameters of which have really been opened up. They're just feeding tons of people. They're doing coats for kids. They're doing toys for tots because it's an economic crisis in a lot of these places. So we are very concerned about those youngsters. Then you have to think about MCAS.
Mm-hmm.
How are we going to test MCAS? So let me give you an example from the Revere Public Schools. And this is an example that Superintendent Diane Kelly, she testified before the Board of Ed on Tuesday. She said, just help me think this through. Think this through together. I have distributed over 7,000 devices to the students in the Revere Public Schools who did not have technology at home.
Yikes.
For me to administer MCAS, I'm going to have to take 7,000 devices back. I'm going to have to sanitize them so that I can administer this test. To do that, for my youngsters in remote learning, I've taken probably 2 weeks of school away from these guys. So let's think through how we're going to do this.
Oh, my goodness. Jeez. You know, I just had this picture of you putting together this 5,000-page binder at night, pouring after you come home from work, putting a plan together for tomorrow morning, getting there tomorrow morning, and someone gives you the agenda, and you just take this 5,000-sheet binder and just throw it up in the air because it's outdated from, you know, from last night.
So that's a very interesting thing. I'm not proud of this. I'm embarrassed to tell you. I have four giant binders that I have been putting together. I have recordings of all of my roundtable meetings, our meetings with the commissioner. Yeah, it's amazing. But here's a bright spot, all right? I don't want to be negative Nelly here. We run a Women's Educational Leadership Network conference every year. It would have taken place in March at Assumption College. It would have been our 15th annual. Obviously, we canceled it. But we have figured out a way to do it remotely. And we have 286 women registered.
Wow.
And So they don't have to get in their car and drive to a college or university in Worcester. So they're bringing a large number of the female leaders on their team to the session, and it's going to be on authentic leadership, a hero or heroine's journey. And then we're going to do a second part on nourishment, how to take care of yourself and your team so that we can get through this together.
Great. I know, you know, the thing when you go on a plane, when the oxygen masks drop down, you got to put yours on first. And that's just you got to take care of yourself. And I know. And by the way, Dr. McGrath, anybody who's ever come in contact with you, I can't imagine anybody ever calling you a negative Nelly. So you're the most positive person I know. And there's nothing you've said today that detracts from that. It's just that it's an ongoing thing. And I really think you've opened up my eyes, at least, to the tremendous challenges and work that face the superintendents of schools. And it's really gratifying, I think, having been in the community as an educator, to know how hard people are working. And I know, in fact, that a lot of people are losing sleep over this, and have probably since March 13th.
I want to sort of leave you with two things to think about. And a man who's far brighter than me, Tim Pavolva, who is the superintendent in Billerica, says this over and over. Remember, our profession is all about relationships. And we're going to come through this, and at the end, we want to have our relationships that are still intact. People are going to remember how we treated them through this crisis, that we were there for them. And I just think that is so incredibly important. And the other thing that we need to keep in mind, and I have the privilege of co-chairing a very large group of people working on an equity project. So my boss, Tom Scott, in a roundtable meeting a couple of weeks ago, said to the roundtable members, remember, we actually have three things going on. We have the COVID pandemic, we have the equity, racial equity crisis, and at the time, we weren't sure about the outcome of the election, so we have the political climate. So this is a challenging time for children not having us with our kids each and every day, for kids to ask the questions, for there to be a healthy, objective debate in a social studies class. You know, it's just it's a tricky time. But for us, it's all about relationships.
Amen to that. And I'm glad you're still on the job, Dr. McGrath. Thank you.
Well, as always, it's good to talk with you.
This has been Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore. Brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Connect with Connections by emailing msonewsports@gmail.com.